Thank you for joining us today for Articulations, an interview series with local artists. This program is a collaboration between the Margaret Sloss Center for Women and Gender Equity, the College of Design, and KHOI Community Radio. My name is Nancy Gebhardt, and we are thrilled to introduce you to four amazing artists in our community, from whom you'll hear every Monday at 4 p.m. during the month of March. This interview series is made possible by the generous support provided by Humanities Iowa and originated with the hashtag Women Know Stuff 2 exhibition and programming created in 2020 by Ruxandra Marcoux, Emily Morgan, and Jennifer Drinkwater. Women Know Stuff 2 programming seeks to highlight women and gender-minoritized non-binary artists' contributions in the arts. Focus on women and non-binary artists' expertise in art making has historically been lacking, with exhibitions typically focusing on what artists represent in their work, more than how they do it or the levels of skill and technical command they achieve in the process. We want to move beyond that by asking about the process, experience, meaning, and impact of the art discussed in these interviews. This is the fourth interview in this series, and I'm excited to be speaking with Helen Nabadua Barton. Helen is a designer and creator living in Ames, Iowa. Growing up in Uganda, community and connection are some of her core values. Helen considers her space of strength and influence to be working with minority-owned or allied businesses and collaborating to share their voice and impact. She is currently working as a user experience designer and staying involved in the Ames community after graduation. Helen, I'm so happy you're here.
I feel absolutely the same, Nancy. I'm honored to be here.
You are one of my favorite people to talk to, and I have been so inspired by all of the work that you do in our community and so grateful to have the chance to know you that I think this is going to be such a wonderful opportunity for maybe others to be introduced to you, but then to also learn from you. So I just want to start with kind of a broad, big question and just ask, what is it that pulls you to create? Because you create in so many different ways, right? From design to installations to community organizing projects. What is it that pulls you to create?
A huge part of what pulls me to create is the opportunity to create conversation and dialogue. I think there are so many parts about our identities or spaces that can only be communicated so much in words. And so I think visual design or installations, really anything, are a chance to move that conversation beyond one plane and let it exist in many. I think it's also a critical part of my own identity. It's how I process and think through things. It's an opportunity to really let myself feel in different spaces. And so those are just a few of the reasons why I create.
Yeah, so it's that this creation is a form of communication, right? And communicating about yourself and in dialogue with other people. So what values do you prioritize in your life, in your creative practice?
The values that are really resonating with me right now, because I think those grow and change, you know, through our own lives and processes, are courage and community. And the way that I really think about the two of those, when it comes to courage, that's not something that comes naturally for me. It's something that I really have to work on and be intentional about. And so it's a value and a constant reminder for myself to challenge myself, to allow myself to be in situations that make me uncomfortable, in the sense that those are the times when I experience the most growth, is in that space of being challenged. And then with community, I think to really engage with a community and really, I don't know, be vulnerable, and then from those interactions create impact, it comes from being courageous. There's a certain part of ourselves that we're sharing in that journey in creating anything, and especially when it comes to work that is as personal as identity or what's important to people. And so all of that combined can create a really powerful work, but there's a journey along the way to do.
Yeah, absolutely. It reminds me of, as you're talking, it reminds me of another Ames artist, Letitia Kenemer, who told me one time, this is 3 or 4 years ago, that she always, every year, she chooses something to do that she's never done before, whether it's maybe sign up for a dance class or work with a new artistic medium that she's never done before, or just take on a project that is scary, right? Because it's so brand new. But that's, I think, what you're talking about too, is this leaning into courage as a space of growth, because she was also explaining that it really informs all the rest of the work that she does at the same time. It makes all of that better.
I completely agree. And Letitia's wonderful. I think that coming and allowing ourselves to be courageous, and I mentioned vulnerability as well, I think to be vulnerable takes a huge amount of courage, but in creating those safe spaces and allowing ourselves to be vulnerable alone and then in together in community, I think there's so much power that comes from that. But I also think there's a huge amount of responsibility as we're challenging ourselves to, you know, to pull that forward or let it influence somebody else.
Yeah, so you said in an earlier conversation actually that the creative space in your mind is the most vulnerable part of your mind. What does that mean?
Yeah, so to me that really means that as I'm going through and creating, especially at the beginning of a project where I might have a couple inklings of where it might go, but I don't have the big picture yet, I have to relax and allow my consciousness to expand into places it doesn't normally go. It also means that I have to process and, you know, different parts of my identity, how it all comes together and connects. And that is the space where I think the best ideas come from. But to get there and allow myself into it, it is a risk. There's a risk that some of those ideas that I'm thinking through aren't the greatest. There's a risk that they might fail. It's also an incredibly personal part of my identity that I'm digging into to get there. And so protecting myself as I'm doing that, you know, sometimes with music, being able to put on African choral music is something that it just touches a part of my soul that feels like, I don't know, my ancestors' wildest dreams speaking through me.
Yeah.
And that's something that I do just to center myself and create that intentional space.
Yeah, I think vulnerability is such a significant part of any creative practice, right? Art making. And so it's important to recognize that and lean into it, but also to find ways to care for it, right? And so you mentioned music as one way that you care for it. Are there other things that you do to kind of care for yourself in those moments?
Yes, so I'm a huge tea person. I absolutely love chai masala or African tea spice. It's a really big part of traditions of welcoming people and visiting people in Uganda. And, you know, there are so many spices that go into that, whether it's cloves, nutmeg, cardamom. It's a milk-based tea that then, you know, has sugar added at the end. And so the ritual of making it is something that is so familiar, whether it was visiting family growing up, going home. It's one of the things I always ask my mom to make for my sister and I, because she has a particular way of making it. And so the ritual of making that tea and then drinking it in the process of creation, it reminds me of home.
Yeah.
It's my most comfortable, centered space. It allows me to be myself. And so that then can be channeled into my work from a space of comfort.
Yeah, absolutely. And making that space something that feels good, that feels supportive, right? Like, I feel like all of those things are creating a very supportive space for you to really explore that vulnerability at the same time. So when you think about courage and you think about community, how do these values inform your creative practice?
The way that they inform my creative practice is starting a project and thinking about the opportunity that we have, whether it's to challenge in some work connected to social justice, like AIMS, Black Lives Matter, or whether it's the intention is to create a community and safe space, welcome new faces in, like with the Women of Color Network, to really do that in a way that is authentic and therefore brings the most community and impact to people, is from a space of vulnerability. And so the courage that it takes to show our truest self to people that we feel comfortable with, there's an immense power that comes from doing that. But there are steps we have to take to do that in the beginning. And so as I think about my creative practice with those two values, it's a reminder that, you know, I'm not just doing this for me. Mm-hmm. I'm doing this for so many different people. It depends on the project. And so I carry them with me mm-hmm. as I'm taking the time to go into these spaces and reflect or be vulnerable and bring people along.
Absolutely. Can you tell us a little bit more about your experience with the Women of Color Network and kind of your introduction into that group and also the design work you've done for them?
Absolutely. So the Women of Color Network has a special place in my heart. Coming to the U.S. from Uganda, my dad's American, and so we visited growing up, and so I expected the transition to be smooth and really easy. And it wasn't. And part of that was recognizing that, you know, the way I present myself, I look African-American, but that isn't my history. It's a space where I feel like I'm an ally, consider myself Black, but I had to learn and grow through, you know, historical knowledge that I don't inherently have. Mm-hmm. And in that space, being biracial in the Women of Color Network, I felt completely accepted. I felt like I could be my truest self and then therefore welcome others into that space, you know, with a broad swath of everybody being accepted.
Yeah.
And so in creating for the Women of Color Network, there's a huge sense of gratitude and passion that comes with that work. You know, one of the things is, for example, creating shirts for an anniversary celebration of the Women of Color Network. And so in creating those shirts, asking our members, you know, how do you want to be represented? How do you want to be seen? What values are important for you and for others to see? And then their absolute joy and happiness at seeing all of those ideas visualized, mm-hmm. wearing them in different spaces, the recognition and conversation that comes from bearing that and carrying it into places where we might not feel as welcome. And something that's really interesting, but I almost think of, I wear African clothing myself sometimes mm-hmm. in situations where I know I'm gonna be uncomfortable as almost a form of armor.
Sure.
It's, you know, my heart is protected mm-hmm. and it's by wearing my identity in all its glory. And so that's almost my hope for some of the designs that I create for communities like that, is that they feel power in what they're wearing. If they need a boost, if they need to pick me up, it's there and everybody else can see it.
Yeah, and that's amazing. And I think one of the most valuable things about artists in those types of organizations and spaces is that they have the creative communication skills, right? To take all of this information you've collected from so many people, all with their own individual and specific identities, and produced a visual, a tangible kind of visual representation where they can see themselves individually, but then also they can feel really supported and cared for in the collective experience that's expressed too. And I think that's just such a necessary and just beautiful skill that artists bring to any space that they're in. And so I imagine that it probably felt pretty great for you too, though, this kind of like full circle moment of like mm-hmm. seeing them and seeing people wear them and expressing all these things that are so important to you about this group in the work that you made.
Yes, it absolutely was, and more.
Yeah, I'm sure. So what about the work that you've done with Ames BLM? Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yes. So something that was really interesting about the work with Ames BLM is it was a community of designers working on it. Some of the designers who identified as Black, some who didn't, but who all had a shared mission, cause, and purpose of, you know, challenging societal expectations or understandings of Blackness, creating space for people to exist and a recognition of truly who they are. And so having so many voices be a part of that discussion and creative process was incredible. Mm-hmm. It's really a chance to learn and collaborate and grow collectively, and also recognizing the individual strength and perspective that everybody brings to their work. And so the space of doing that and collaboration is something that I truly value and enjoy. And so being able to do that with that larger vision in mind was really powerful. You know, some of the design might have been a social media graphic mm-hmm. for an event that we were holding, or it might have been a yard sign. And so, you know, within like the established traditions of graphic design, it might not have been this really revolutionary piece, but stepping away from that and really focusing on the community impact, people feeling heard or the space was created for them, then, you know, the impact is immeasurable.
Yeah, absolutely. And even just, I'm assuming, seeing how it works and functions as a component of community organizing too, right? When you create that social media graphic and it reaches people and then they show up, right? And seeing how important that actually is, that visual communication in producing what you're saying is this impact, this kind of tangible action in response to it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's interesting too, because it begins to flow into a space of, you know, user experience or service design, mm-hmm. which is, you know, where I grew into because of the connection with people. But something that I think is really interesting is, you know, technically everything can be a user experience. Like a protest, a really well-organized protest, you're thinking about the goal that you're trying to create and you're working backwards to plan for that. So I think it's interesting how each of these different, you know, disciplines or other things can be interpreted mm-hmm. through a social justice lens or a community-based change lens.
Yeah, absolutely. Can you tell us a little bit about how, because you're saying courage and community are really the values you're focusing on now, and can you tell us a little bit more about how courage became one of these important values?
Yes. So part of, you know, the transition of coming to the U.S. and being Ugandan, holding that as a really core part of my identity, but also having challenges and ultimately fear. I was so scared of how other people would perceive me, sounding the way that I do, looking the way that I do, that I wouldn't fit expectations of what it meant to be Ugandan. And so I kind of shied away from connecting with others. And, you know, in a lot of my classes at Iowa State or other spaces that I was in, I was the only, whether it was the only Black person, the only Black woman, African, Ugandan, you know, you can get more and more mm-hmm. specific, but in so often being the only, the risk that's inherently there to express our full selves is so much higher.
Yeah.
And I recognize that's different for other people, but it got to the point in senior year where I decided to bring my whole self into spaces where I was uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And so the Jumu'iya Everywhere project was a huge part of that. But I created the project in a reflection of everything that I had ever wanted to do, and with a model that I knew I was going to have to get out of my comfort zone and take a lot of courage to do so.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I do want to talk a little bit more about the Jumu'iya Everywhere project. It was a project that you received a grant for to complete, right? And first, maybe let's just start with, what does Jumu'iya mean and where does the project title come from?
Yes. So Jumu'iya means community in Swahili. Swahili is spoken all across East Africa, kind of a lingua franca for the area, if you will. But living here, you know, one of the things that, and ways that I found the Ugandan community, it's kind of a crazy story, but it was in the bathroom of the College of Design, and I heard somebody speaking Luganda. And this many miles from home, like, okay, I have not gotten out of my comfort zone to this point. If I'm going to do it, it's going to be right now. Mm-hmm. And so I just walked outside and said, this is going to be totally random, but I heard you speaking Luganda. I'm actually Ugandan. And it turns out, you know, there's so many Ugandans here that I'd never gotten far enough out of my comfort zone to really connect.
Yeah.
And So then Swahili connects even a larger swath of East Africans. And so I recognize that the way that I developed and found community in Iowa started with the Women of Color Network. It started with Ames BLM. It started with areas like that. I really wondered, how does everybody else find community in Iowa? What does it mean to hold the identities we do and live here? And how can I communicate and share that with other people? Recognizing the times that we're in of and how little we might know about other identities. And so that's really where the project started from.
Yeah, so how did the project center African diaspora community members, right? In the Ames community specifically.
Yeah. And that was really interesting because some people I knew already. There are some wonderful humans that I was fortunate enough to meet through the Women of Color Network. And what's interesting is, you know, with the privilege that I hold, I have to be vulnerable first. I can usually tell when somebody's from an African country. It's just one of those knowing things.
Sure.
And, but I have to reveal that I'm Ugandan first because normally they can't tell. And some of those conversations and those personal connections were where it started. In other cases, it was going out on a limb in a space of pure fear for myself and like messaging in a group chat to say, hi, this is a project I'm working on. This is, I would really love to talk to some of you and hear your story. And, you know, honestly, just listen. And so that I had to reach out to community members in a way that I never had to before. And I learned and grew so much from that experience.
Yeah, definitely. You can see it leading into courage and community through the whole project. So as part of the project, you asked people to reflect on the experiences shared with you from East Africans living in Ames by asking them to find connection to their own path, their own journey. How did people respond to that question or those prompts?
It was absolutely incredible. Some of the questions were as broad as, what is your story? What makes you who you are? And I loved how everybody had their own way of answering that question. You know, their own values and things that are important to them really came through in how they expressed those questions. And what was really interesting as well is I learned things about Uganda or other East African countries that I've been to that I never knew before, you know, because of my own experiences. And so it made me think about all these things. I asked my mom questions afterwards. And so being able to learn and truly reflect on our own identities from that community space was incredible. I think too, how other people had formed connections, how they had been challenged, the ways they had grown from it. I always knew that I wanted to share this project with people. You know, that was the original intent. But the way that I wanted to share it grew so much. The way that I thought about, you know, visually interpreting these stories into screen-printed postcards evolved and changed because the power in their words, the passion, the joy, you know, the laughter of connecting with somebody who understands all the references without having to provide context. And so almost all of them went long too because just the happiness in connecting, the gratefulness for the space. So,
So you said one of the goals of the project was to understand how community was being created in Iowa. And so what did you learn?
So I learned that a lot of people, especially before COVID, they have gatherings in parks. And, you know, there's Ugandan or Kenyan music playing. People create the traditional foods from home. Some of the amazing things that I found is, you know, the extent to which we will go to find those connections with home. Some people mentioned things like matoke. It's a traditional type of banana that we eat in Uganda. And if somebody finds out that they have it at a city in Kansas, they're going to drive. They will drive to Kansas to pick it up because that might be the only time that you'll get it over a series of months. And so food, I think, is an incredibly huge component of that. I think the other part too is, you know, the smaller things along the way. Celebrations, weddings, different things like that. Opportunities to wear a traditional dress or connect with family members or people across a number of different ways. Those were then the connections that people took with them. Mm-hmm. I think something that really stuck out to me was what somebody was saying about friendship. They said, you know, as an African, when I think about friendship, you know, friendship is forever. Wherever I am, if I've created a connection with you, if I go somewhere else in the U.S., if I go home, I take that with me. Mm-hmm. And the comparison of how they felt like their friendships here were really ephemeral. They felt mm-hmm. like people that they met who may not have been African didn't value the longevity of that relationship in quite the same way. And so I think the cultural differences and expectations as well, how people adapted, you know, to fit in.
Yeah. What a wonderful project. Is Jumuiya Everywhere, is it still an active project?
Yes. So right now I'm kind of at the phase in my life where so many transitions after graduating, starting a full-time job, and now I'm coming to the point where I'm creating the space to learn and grow and reflect. And so the project is currently on pause, but I'm really excited for, I think, some potential in the future. One of the ways that I'm really curious about expanding it is talking to people from other regions mm-hmm. of the African continent. As I was doing it, one of the people that I was interviewing, his roommate was from somewhere else, a West African country. And the roommate said, well, you know, can I be part of your interviews? Like, right now I'm focusing on East Africa, but it kind of sparked in my mind about, I started with the space of familiarity.
Yeah.
Connecting with people where we had a lot of shared reference points. What does it mean to go beyond that?
Mm-hmm.
What are the ways that, you know, from different regions in Africa, you know, there are certain traditions or rituals or, you know, cultural expectations. Mm-hmm. How do we carry all of those to the U.S., to Iowa?
Yeah.
And so that's one thing I'm really interested in exploring, is going beyond the familiar to other spaces and other people. Because I think what was incredible is a lot of times we don't have the space to just speak.
Yeah.
And for others to listen.
Yeah, to be heard.
Yes. Right. And that's something that I'm so grateful for, is any time that I can listen in that way. And I also noticed the joy that people had from talking freely about their home. It could have been anything from like challenges they'd experienced to their favorite parts.
Mm-hmm.
And so anything that I can do to continue creating spaces to listen also means an incredible amount. I realize that's a lot of responsibility.
Absolutely,
after listening.
Right? Yeah.
Because
to care for people's stories and care for people's experiences.
Yes. Yeah. And truly treasure them so that they can be shared in a way that, you know, is agreed upon, that everybody feels comfortable with. But continuing to listen is, and create from it, is the goal.
That's awesome. So you mentioned earlier too, in talking to people about community, and you dropped in a line that pre-pandemic, right? Pre-pandemic, we gathered in spaces, and pre-pandemic, mm-hmm. you know, we could be physically present together. So I'm curious, especially as someone who values community, how has the pandemic, and along with it, the increase of virtual interaction, what impact has that had on your relationship building?
Yes. That is something that I think the intention is so different. You know, whether it's with my job where I started virtually and I have the option to go in person, but it's optional,
mm-hmm.
or whether it's classes, whether at the end there, whether it's with friends and family. I think the effort that we put in to be intentional communicating, it just grows. For me, I'm fantastic in person. If we're having a conversation, I'm right there. Like, I can be really engaged. But I have a lot of challenges sometimes, you know, following up afterwards, consistency with messaging. I feel like I have a certain amount of social anxiety that comes from remembering to text back or communicate in that way. And so for myself, you know, towards the end of school with everything happening, it was all so much. Mm-hmm. And I retreated from being as intentional as I had been in the ways that I was communicating and reaching out to people. And so now I'm in a phase where I'm, you know, taking better care of myself mentally. And as a result, I'm working to earn people's trust back, because part of the everything that's happened in the pandemic is there's an immense amount of grief mm-hmm. that the world has gone through and experienced. And so what it means to check up on somebody,
yeah.
what it means to be there for them in a way that is comfortable and that they're willing to accept has grown and shifted. And so what I'm trying to do right now is just slowly earn that trust back.
Yeah.
In taking care of myself along the way so that I can be as intentional with building those connections as many people as I can.
Absolutely. What is it that those connections and relationships bring to your creative practice? Like, why are they so important?
I think they're so important because really people make us who we are. I think, you know, the people where we might have come from, where we might have started, whether or not we stay in contact with them, they define a part of us. The people that we choose to be in community with are an incredible amount of where our inspiration might come from or where our references come from or anything else. And so being able to let the people in my life know that I appreciate them, that their space, their time, their energy is valuable mm-hmm. and that I'm grateful for it. All of that and the positive reinforcement from being in community with them allows me to create from an authentic, peaceful space that I don't get to reach without the wonderful people in my life.
Yeah. So you said you're in a season of finding yourself as you navigate so many transitions, right? Graduation, even the pandemic being part of that, new job, all of those types of things. What are you discovering in this season and how is it informing what you do?
So I'm reflecting on myself in just totally new ways, things that I've never had to address before. I think a really big one for me has been consistency.
Yeah.
Something, you know, in college, you have to be consistent for a semester. You can throw all your energy into that. And then after that's done, then you get a break. You get to do something else.
And that class is ended, right? Like, you don't ever have to go back to that work.
You get the grade and it's all closed.
Yeah.
And so now I'm in a phase, though, where it's kind of an indefinite space of time where, you know, you're working for an indefinite space of time, you know, building longer term relationships with and friendships with people in my life. And so consistency has been a huge part of a growth area for me. It's something that I hadn't been challenged in before. Mm-hmm. And so whether it's personal habits, I mentioned mental health and things like that, physical health or anything else, but challenging myself to be consistent has been a large focus recently. But I think, you know, even beyond that is a very specific thing. Creating the space to read again. Mm. Creating the space to listen and share with others. Those are all the things that I think can really easily be let go of mm-hmm. when we're in school or so many other things are going on.
And yeah, because we feel like we don't have the time for it, right?
Yes.
And it's just maybe that we're not prioritizing the time for it.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And I think now I'm kind of getting to where I'm learning these things for myself. And so my creative practice and what that's looked like, it's growing and changing. But what I'm really excited for is to invest that time really intentionally. Just see what comes out of it.
I think that's great. So we're coming to a close and I like asking this question because I like to just be open to the freedom of dreaming, right? And just think about like possibilities, I think, is a place of hope for me, and I hope for other people as well. And so when given the space to dream freely, what is it that you creatively dream about?
I absolutely love this question.
Good. And,
yes. And so something that it kind of makes me think about, you know, in high school, I was fortunate enough to be on a project where we were collaborating with a refugee settlement community. They were supporting a number of different people, and refugees were coming to this facility where they could take classes, totally their own choice, anything they wanted to grow in or be supported and investing in. And so one of the things I got to do with a few other classmates was creating a mural.
Mm-hmm.
We taught art classes for a couple weeks, and then we encouraged our participants to then create on this wall. And many of them hadn't had the opportunity to draw in such a permanent space before or work around it. And it's definitely a period of growth. Reflecting on it now,
sure.
I know like the organization or some of the nuance of that could have definitely been refined, but it makes me think about what would it be to create a large community scale public art installation.
Yeah.
To allow folks that, you know, even in work or other spaces where I invite people to sketch, then a lot of people don't feel comfortable, you know, expressing themselves in that way. So what does it look like to first create the foundation to establish vulnerability and courage in creative practices very individually? And then what does it look like to bring all those voices together? You know, what opportunities do we have to have conversation and dialogue along the way that then in its own way will be manifested in that art piece for others to see and experience and reflect on? And so not exactly sure what it'll look like.
Yeah, I feel like I'm going to leave here and just be noticing blank walls around town, right? And I'll just make a list. Like, Helen, you should think about this space when you get to there.
I like
right?
this. I'm like sensing a collaboration.
I think, you know, I'd be honored if, you know, somehow. But I am going to do that. I'm going to look for wall space. But if people want to keep up with you and follow what you're doing, what is the best way for them to do that?
Yes. So I am on social media, the caveat being that I am awful at social media, but I'm working on it, growing and changing. That would be Helen N. Barton on Instagram. You can feel free to email me. I feel like I'm pretty good at email. So that would be, again, first name, Helen, then another N, because we're fun, .barton@gmail.com. And please feel free to reach out, as I always speak this into the ether, but I'm absolutely a people's person. So whatever it looks like, if anything resonated with you, or if you just want to chat to me, and Nancy's pretty cool too. So.
I am also not a social media person, so I totally understand that. And yeah, I am the same, where I just like, just come up, give me a hug. Like, I'm a hugger.
Same.
Like, yeah. It's like, and then let's chat. So Helen, thank you so much for all that you've shared and all that you do. And I'm constantly inspired by you and so grateful for all that you give.
Thank you so much, Nancy.
So thank you for listening to Articulations, brought to you by the Margaret Sless Center for Women and Gender Equity, the College of Design, and KHOI Community Radio 89.1 FM, with support from Humanities Iowa. Our interview is edited by Rosie Rowe. To round out the hour, we invite you to sit back and enjoy a selection of songs picked by Helen. You can find the full Articulations playlist on the SLAS Center website. I would also like to take a personal moment to express my love and gratitude for my dear friend Carol Horowitz, who is one of my community art heroes and the person who taught me everything I know about community radio. May her memory be a blessing. Thank you to our four featured artists, Jamie Malone, Kristen Roach, Sarah Merritt, and Helen Barton. Thank you again for joining us this month for Articulations.